Welcome to the April 2025 News Bulletin podcast for commercial shipping marine surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. We open our podcast with an introduction from IIAMS CEO Mike Schwartz. Dear colleague, I wanted to start my column this month by posing a question to stimulate your mind. What on earth is going on in the Red Sea with a succession of dive boat incidents and accidents in recent times? The latest in this long saga of unfortunate events happened on the 6th of February when a dive boat on tow, with no passengers on board fortunately, capsized, spilling six crew into the water. Thankfully, all were recovered safely on this occasion. The tour boat Triton had just completed undergoing maintenance and was en route to Hurghada when it capsized. In line with the principles of the International Maritime Organization Casualty Investigation Code, the UK has been registered as a substantially interested state in the Egyptian safety investigations into these accidents. Now, the UK Marine Accident Investigation Branch has taken what would seem to be the highly unusual step of publishing a safety flyer on this matter as a consequence. The facts are that 16 Red Sea liveaboard dive boats have been lost over the last 5 years. Seven of these losses happened in the last 21 months, and three of these resulted in numerous fatalities, including UK nationals. The following safety issues have been identified. The Red Sea liveaboard dive boats involved were poorly constructed and often substantially modified, extended, which resulted in some vessels exhibiting inadequate stability. Essential lifesaving equipment was defective, out of date for servicing and, in some cases, missing. The rapid spread of fire is indicative of poor structural fire protection, and items of essential safety equipment, such as fire detection systems and fire extinguishers, were either missing or defective. Emergency escape routes were via lockable doors, had no emergency lighting and were unmarked. Safety briefings to passengers were of a poor standard or not conducted at all. Crews appeared poorly trained and were unfamiliar with their vessels. Who on earth is inspecting and surveying these vessels and passing them as fit? I shall leave you to draw your own conclusions. In this day and age, this is unacceptable, and I can but only add my voice to the many others who want answers, not least the families of those who have so needlessly lost loved ones. I call for an urgent review by the local maritime authorities and urge them to raise surveying and inspection standards in the Red Sea to prevent future incidents of this nature occurring. Last month was both full-on and interesting. In early March, I accepted an invitation from the International Marine Contractors Association to speak at their North America regional meeting in Newport, Rhode Island, which attracted a sizable audience. I was taken aback by that, but it was refreshing to see so many people face to face in one space. In my presentation, I introduced the audience to IMS as the organization that accredits EC mid-accredited vessel inspectors and followed on by giving an overview of the successful scheme run by our Marine Surveying Academy division. The uncertainty caused by the recent US election was a hot topic of conversation, with some concern expressed about the reining back of the East Coast offshore wind sector following the change of government in the US. The IIAMS yacht and small craft training event in mid-March also drew a good hybrid audience. Much of the morning session was given over to two detailed presentations about lithium-ion battery technology and the challenges associated with it. These batteries, and their installations, remain an ongoing challenge and indeed confound many surveyors who are increasingly coming across them in their work. The regulators are still behind the curve. That means good, accurate and reliable information is not easy to source and is in short supply. So, I am especially indebted to David O'Neill and Maurice Jones for sharing their in-depth knowledge on this important subject in their back-to-back presentations. Their advice and guidance were much appreciated by all who listened so intently. Until next month, survey well. For our first report, the United States Coast Guard has published guidance on the proper design, arrangement, and operation of vessel maneuvering control systems after a high-speed passenger ferry struck a pier in New York while docking. Numerous passengers sustained minor injuries in the incident, and the combined repairs to the vessel and pier exceeded $500,000. The Coast Guard investigation revealed numerous safety issues, including concerns with the vessel's control system configuration. On the day of the accident, the vessel's captain attempted a standard docking maneuver, transferring control from the center console to a bridge wing station for better visibility. However, the propulsion control transfer failed, and efforts to slow the vessel from a forward speed of 12 knots were insufficient. A review revealed problematic control panel designs, including uniform push buttons. All push buttons were the same color and size, with identical LEDs, despite varying importance. This uniformity can confuse operators, especially under stressful conditions. And technological complexity. Advanced technology introduced complexities unfamiliar to many mariners. The vessel had identical control panels in three locations and three different propulsion modes, necessitating extensive crew training to understand all functions in normal and emergency situations. The Coast Guard CG, CVC Policy Letter 1707 provides important guidelines for the inspection and oversight of vessel control systems, emphasizing the need for rigorous testing and verification to prevent control transfer failures. Additionally, the Marine Safety Center provides essential program guidelines which outline specific expectations for the evaluation and approval of vessel automation and control systems. To read the full incident report, visit iamsusa.com. Up next, the Australian Transport Safety Bureau says ambiguous procedures led to vessel steering failure. CMA, CGM is revising its steering guidance across the fleet after ambiguous procedures contributed to one of its ships colliding with a navigational beacon in the Yarra River. Departing the Port of Melbourne on 25 May 2023 under the conduct of a harbour pilot, container ship CMA, CGM Puccini contacted the navigational beacon after swinging wide in a turn when its rudder began responding erratically to helm orders. The ship was slowed and returned towards the middle of the channel, before being stabilized with tug assistance and then conducted to nearby Webb Dock. While the ship sustained minor hull paint damage, the beacon was significantly damaged. The ATSB investigation concluded that the erratic steering was the result of a hydraulic bypass valve being left open by crew after an AMSA port state control inspection the day before the incident. Furthermore, the investigation identified the risk of this happening was heightened by ambiguous language in CMA, CGMU's fleet-wide safety management system steering gear procedures. Specifically, the procedures only referred to steering gear failure, instead of using common industry terms, such as emergency steering and local steering. In addition, terminology within the guidance was not clearly and explicitly defined. As a result of the investigation, CMA, CGM has advised the ATSB that its fleet-wide steering gear failure procedure will be amended and titled the Emergency Steering Procedure and improved for clarity. The investigation also found that several officers on board were not as proficient with steering gear operation and change of control modes as was required by international regulations. Read the story at iamsaustralia.com.au. For our next story, Lloyd's Register has introduced its first-class notation for fin stabilizers. For decades, fin stabilizers have been considered a nice-to-have feature rather than an essential component of a ship. However, with the increasing demand for enhanced passenger experiences on modern cruise ships, fin stabilizers have become integral to providing a smooth and enjoyable journey. Located under the waterline on the side of a ship's hull, fin stabilizers provide a roll damping effect, counteracting the ship's natural roll and ensuring a stable voyage. The new class notation will cover the strength, machinery, and control aspects of fin stabilizers, including their integration into the ship's hull. While it will not assess the performance of the fin stabilizer in improving seakeeping, it will ensure that the stabilizer is functional and reliable. This development is particularly beneficial for cruise operators, as it addresses the critical role of fin stabilizers in enhancing passenger safety and comfort. The sudden loss of a stabilizer can create immediate safety risks for passengers and lead to extended periods of reduced guest satisfaction until repairs are completed. Next, the UK Maritime Coast Guard Agency has updated the expiration date of MIN-682M domestic passenger vessels, information on risk assessment to support application for exemption from damage stability requirements to 1 January 2026. The change has come about to accommodate operators whose first renewal survey after 29 December 2024 falls later in the year. The vessels affected most by these new requirements were vessels certified as Class 5 and operating on tidal Category C waters. In our next segment, Guard P&I Club has highlighted the issue of serious scrap metal fires and questions if the IMSBC code is adequately addressing the risks. According to Guard, most of its cases and those reported in accident investigations appear to concern scrap metal declared by shippers as Group C, which under the IMSBC code is cargo which is neither liable to liquefy, Group A, nor to possess chemical hazards, Group B. Images and accounts of scrap metal fires associated with such non-hazardous declarations paint a more concerning risk picture. Accident investigation reports speak of rapidly developing fires with intense heat and heavy smoke threatening harm to the crew, shore firefighters as well as local residents. In its insight into this particular topic, GARD covers the categories of scrap metal in the IMSBC code, the lack of screening of cargoes, and a review of the IMSBC code. You can read it in full at GARD.no/insights. For our next report, Dutch authorities are set to enforce ISO bunker sampling standard in Port of Rotterdam, according to the International Bunker Industry Association. The association has said the IBIA Secretariat has received information from the Port of Rotterdam that the Inspectorate for Environment and Transport in the Netherlands is planning for the Port of Rotterdam to strictly enforce the rules for fuel oil sampling on board the receiving vessel via drip sampling to conform with ISO 13739. If both parties agree on a different sample point, that is other than the receiving vessel's manifold, then the inspectorate will have to be informed, and can issue a waiver. Other samples may be taken via the bunker barge sample point. All seal, numbers, and counter seals have to be noted on the BDN as this rule is not currently standard practice in ARA. The Dutch inspectorate are initially expected to be flexible but are likely to start to enforce this rule during this year and no later than the beginning of 2026. This will coincide with the obligation of mass flow meters. Find out more by visiting ibia.net/news. Up next, West P&I has alerted its members of a significant oil spill that occurred during bunkering operations. In the notice, the club explained that in the incident while receiving bunkers, fuel oil escaped through an undetected crack in a deck scupper drain line that penetrated through a fuel oil tank. The structural failure was only discovered after oil began leaking from the vessel's side when the fuel level reached the height of the defect. Although not a common design feature, the arrangement of drain lines, scupper pipes passing through fuel oil tanks still exists. Pipes in such arrangements face accelerated corrosion due to repeated heating and the presence of seawater. Stress concentration due to vessel motion and vibration contributes to premature piping failure. Additionally, challenging access for thorough inspection makes timely identification of affected areas particularly difficult. The club strongly urges all of its members to undertake immediate and thorough reviews of their vessels' piping arrangements, with particular emphasis on implementing prudent risk mitigation measures. Find out more at westpni.com. Next, the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board have released the results of a report after the installation of an incorrect valve in a pipe to a diesel oil tank led to a fatal fire aboard a cargo vessel docked in La Porte, Texas. On January 8, 2024, a fire broke out in the engine room aboard the cargo vessel Stride during bunkering operations while docked at the Barber's Cut Marine Terminal. The fire self-extinguished after crew members shut down all ventilation to the engine room. Two crew members died as a result of the fire, and one was seriously injured. The vessel was declared a total loss valued at $12 million. 6 weeks before the fire, a replacement valve was ordered for the ship's port double-bottom diesel oil tank. After the fire, investigators discovered the installed valve was not the same type of valve specified by the vessel's fuel oil system drawing. Rather than an angle stop valve, a similar-looking angle stop check valve, which allows diesel oil to flow in only one direction, even when open, was ordered and installed instead. As a result of the incorrect valve installation, once diesel oil filled another tank to capacity during bunkering, the diesel oil was directed up the common vent line, rather than the port, or intended, DBDO tank, where it flowed from a small cut-out section of the vent pipe that had been sealed at an unknown time. The flexible sealing and tape covering the cutout failed, and diesel oil poured down into the engine room and onto operating machinery, causing a fire. Contributing to the overfilling of the diesel oil tank was engine crew members not monitoring the levels of the tanks being filled aboard the vessel, as required by the bunkering procedure in the operating company's safety management system. The company's bunkering procedures required a minimum of 2 engineering officers and 2 engine ratings to be on duty during bunkering operations. However, at the time of the fire, only 2 engineering officers and 1 engine rating were involved with bunkering operations. Read the report at iamsusa.com. For our next report, St. Kitts and Nevis International Ship Registry has announced a concentrated inspection campaign on pilot ladder transfer and boarding arrangements. The concentrated inspection campaign on pilot ladder transfer and boarding arrangements is being held for 3 months from the 1st of April 2025. The purpose of this campaign is to ensure that vessels comply with relevant international regulations regarding pilot transfer and boarding arrangements, particularly those outlined in the SOLAS Convention. During the campaign, all St. Kitts and Nevis flagged vessels attending flag state inspections will undergo a thorough inspection of a ship's pilot ladder transfer and boarding arrangements, to assess their condition, rigging procedures, and compliance with safety regulations to ensure proper pilot transfer arrangements are in place as per the above. Attending flag state inspectors will look to assess the crew's knowledge and competency in correctly rigging the pilot ladder arrangement for safe transfer. The flag state inspectors will pay particular attention to the integrity of the ropes used to hoist and secure the ladder, checking for damage, wear and tear, proper functioning of steps and spreader. Inspectors will verify that the vessel maintains proper documentation related to pilot ladder inspections and maintenance, and that original equipment manufacturer plates match those listed on the certificate and possess a marine equipment directive marking such as a wheel mark and an accompanying ISO standard reference. This administration also would like to refer to its MC 112-22 on required boarding arrangements for pilot issued to remind all parties concerned about recommendations of the International Maritime Organization on pilot ladder transfer and boarding arrangements. Up next, maritime life-saving equipment and ship's fire safety systems have been the focus of the 11th session of the IMO's Subcommittee on Ship Systems and Equipment. The Nautical Institute provided a summary of the meeting saying one topic under consideration related to dealing with electric vehicle fires in ro-ro passenger ships. It was noted that EVs have a lower fire rate of just 25 fires per 100,000 vehicles sold, compared to 1,530 fires per 100,000 sold for petrol cars. A variety of proposals were submitted for future fire systems development to address growing concerns about fire protection, detection and extinguishing onboard vessels that carry new energy vehicles. These have been developed into a roadmap through which proposed regulatory amendments were drafted. During the discussion on arrangements for the testing of free-fall lifeboats without actual launching of the lifeboat, the Nautical Institute, along with various states and other consultative organizations, supported an intervention by inter-managers seeking at least two separate safety mechanisms to prevent any possibility of inadvertent launch, with associated risk to seafarers, during such testing. However, some historic caution regarding the use of fall prevention devices on lifeboats excluded this provision from the amendments to the LSA code that will be presented to the Maritime Safety Committee for approval. The meeting agreed new rules regarding ships' atmospheric oil mist detectors, which will be sent to June's Maritime Safety Committee for formal approval. The subcommittee also validated IMO Model Course 3.05 on Survey of Fire Appliances and Provisions, which will be published by the IMO once brief editorial and cross-references checks have been completed. Next, the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board has published a report after cargo was lost and damaged off container ship President Eisenhower. On February 6, 2024, U.S.-flagged container ship President Eisenhower lost 23 shipping containers overboard and another 10 were damaged as the vessel was drifting about 94 miles south of Oakland, California, while awaiting a berthing assignment. None of the lost containers contained hazardous materials. The value of the lost cargo and damage to the container ship was estimated at over $735,000. Longshoremen at the Port of Los Angeles began loading the vessel on January 31 in accordance with a cargo loading plan. The cargo loading plan was developed by the ship planners using the verified gross mass of each container, which was provided by the booking agent. The VGM was determined by combining the empty weight of the container plus the weight of the cargo loaded into it. Before the plan was developed, the booking agent had to manually enter the cargo weight of 40 containers due to an error in the booking system. During the manual entry, 39 container cargo weights were entered incorrectly and the VGM for those containers were significantly underreported. The actual VGMs for the 39 containers was 18.3 to 22.2 metric tons greater than the VGMs used to develop the cargo loading plan. Because the cargo loading plan included inaccurate VGMs, the container stack weights exceeded the maximum weight limit and the containers were loaded in reverse stratified stacks, which caused the cargo securing equipment to fail while the vessel drifted south of Oakland. The booking agent has since modified the procedures and booking system to prevent this type of input error from occurring again. Up next, the Liberia Maritime Authority has published a marine advisory on the voluntary replacement of rocket parachute flares due to concerns regarding the specified altitude and burning time when fired. The item in question are Kokusai Co. Company Limited rocket parachute flares, type KP-16, date of manufacture from February 2021 to July 2024. The Liberian Maritime Authority recommends replacing these flares in accordance with information provided by the manufacturer. The instructions also contain steps on how to identify the rocket parachute flares and where to find the nearest COMET distributors for WESCOM signal and rescue. In our next segment, the Maritime and Port Authority of Singapore has published guidance on transporting biofuel blends by conventional bunker ships. With effect from 7 March this year, Singapore-registered conventional bunker ships may transport blends of up to 30% by volume of biofuel. In a circular, the authority highlighted the draft Marine Environment Protection Committee interim guidance on the carriage of blends of biofuels by conventional bunker ships agreed by the 12th session of the Subcommittee on Pollution Prevention and Response. This draft guidance will be reviewed for approval at the 83rd MEPC session this month. The draft guidance said conventional bunker ships can transport the B30 biofuel as long as all residues or tank washings are discharged ashore unless the oil discharge monitoring equipment is approved for the biofuel blend or blends being shipped. This is until further development of carriage requirements on biofuels for conventional bunker ships certified for carriage of oil fuels under MARPOL Annex IA or the revision of the current carriage requirements are confirmed. Following various pilots, MPA Singapore participated actively in the draft guidance and accepted this draft for early implementation for Singapore-registered conventional bunker ships starting from 7 March 2025. No separate MPA approval is necessary. You can read the full guidance in the news section of our website. In our second-to-last story, Lloyd's Register has highlighted port state control inspections in Asia which have been raising deficiencies against ships where the escape trunk does not proceed all the way to the lowest level of the engine room and which instead have short, inclined stairs leading from the bottom level of the engine room to the lowermost door of the engine room escape trunk. Certain PSC inspections have also required ship's crews to demonstrate an effective evacuation of an injured crew member from the lowest level of the engine room to the escape trunk as part of a rescue drill. Deficiencies have subsequently been raised by PSC inspectors where the rescue drill was not considered satisfactory. Lloyd's Register have provided a list of recommended next steps, which you can find at lr.org under its Knowledge Hub. And for our final story, ship owners and operators of EU vessels must take steps to ensure that all new firefighting suits on board comply with changes to European regulations which enter into force from June 2025, according to urgent advice from Viking Lifesaving Equipment. The Lifesaving Equipment Solutions provider recommends fleet managers undertake a full risk assessment of their firefighting suits to verify compliance with requirements applying under MED regulations EU 2024/1975. These are in addition to provisions in effect since August 2024, that all new firefighting suits must be tested to EN 469-2020 standards. From June, all new firefighting suits bought for EU vessels must feature all three of the enhanced protection capabilities included in Level 2 classifications within MED regulations. While Level 1 firesuits in service will remain compliant until they wear out, they must be replaced by Level 2 PPE once they are no longer fit for purpose or worn out. Developed in response to high-risk firefighting, Level 2 notation covers radiant and convective heat resistance, enhanced water penetration protection and breathability. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.